Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We're rebroadcast on A2Zen.fm on Sundays at 3 p.m. Nice little coincidence there, don't you think? And then we archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show page. So you have lots of opportunities. And I will also tell you that many of the interviews that you hear on this program, they are longer than what you hear on this radio program or what you hear on the A to Zen broadcast. Sometimes these interviews run an hour and 10 minutes, 20 minutes. It just depends upon what the universe has in store for you and for me as well. As I begin each one of these programs, I jokingly say that we have begun my therapy session, and I'm very excited to get more help from my guests. And today is no exception. Going to get lots of help today from Mystic Pete Chronicles. I actually have in front of me book one, Sex and Mysticism. That should be a lot of fun, with our guest, Mystic Pete. And Pete, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, how are you?
It's great to have you on the program. And, of course, this is a subject, obviously, we'll be looking at that as well, that people have been having problems with, well, I'll say just as long as man's been on the planet. And we've been trying to find answers and trying to find ways of working through this issue, trying not to be too prudish and trying to deal with it openly and honestly. And I do have to say that back about 15, 20 years ago, I was interviewing... Believe it or not, I was interviewing some folks. They were they weren't Amish, but Mennonites. And they had written a book about sex. And we were doing this on a Christian radio station. And as long as we stayed with the proper, appropriate terminology, the conversation, we had no problem. I think that's where a lot of people, they get stuck, is like, well, I've got to use that other language. And it's like, well, no, you really, if you can't use the correct language, then you still have a problem even with the slang. So I don't know that we'll get quite that in depth, but who knows where we're going with this. As I say often, the universe asks the questions, and I'm just along for the ride. You also host your own radio program.
I'm a radio host here in Los Angeles. I'm more of a music host. And we'll keep everything PG, but try to get into some juicy details, too.
Well, let me ask you, because I'm always curious as to how people found themselves behind the mic. Mine was almost 35 years ago at the age of, 19. How did this begin for you? Because the biggest fear most people have is of public speaking, and honestly, that's what radio is.
Well, we'll get right into the mysticism, because I'm first a cellist and music producer.
Wonderful.
But the music I do is very different. It's very deep, and I take people into kind of transcendental places through cello and chanting, almost like a meditation, but I just know how to kind of push people's consciousness out into like these other dimensions, and people go on journeys and talk to their guardian angels when I play music. And I had to start creating events myself and producing events so that I would have the right context to do my musical spiritual work, because nobody quite knew where to put it. Didn't quite fit into bars with people drinking and catcalling out to the cellist to take some lessons. So I started producing in LA and did a lot of events here, a couple of 100 at like yoga studios that featured dancing and the arts, and then always ended up with my meditation. But after a while, I felt like, boy, it's sure hard to produce events in LA. If anybody's been in the scene, you know, it's hard to get people out. So I had a dream that I was going to be on the radio, and I was going, oh, yeah, right. How do you get on the radio? A month later, I'm walking up a mountain in Malibu. There's like a rave on top of this mountain I was going to, and a friend I knew who was on KXLU was walking down. And anyway, he invited me to host the next night, and the next night I was doing radio. So it was a little spiritual guidance there. I don't think it's hard to open that door, but apparently I was supposed to be there, and that was about 7 or 8 years ago. And, things are opening up. I'm trying to go national, and I'm very interested in moving more into the talk show environment, because Lord knows there's not a lot of spiritual talk in the national media.
No, there is not.
There's a huge amount of people doing yoga, meditation, you know, talking to angels, all this kind of, but where is our media? Where is our radio? I'm so glad that you, Richard, have this beautiful show because nobody else is doing it.
Well, I know that when I first started this program, I had some guidance from a good friend of mine who is actually going to, who is regularly on this program. He says, you know, you can do any format you want. You can do any genre as far as talk radio in terms of the guests and so forth. But you will not be happy and satisfied. And we are talking here sort of like a spiritual mentor here. He says, you will not be happy and satisfied if you're doing religion and politics and current events and the news and so forth, that you really need to focus on metaphysics and spirituality. And I didn't really have a problem with that because I knew and I have known as I've gone to various people's websites. And you know how people will have a page that'll be like resources or their favorite links and what have you? I ran into this very interesting scenario where almost every website I've been to, I've never seen duplicate websites. So basically that told me I'm never going to run out of material, even if I did this for 3 hours a day, 5 days a week for the rest of my life. So there are people out there that are doing the work, and that's what we want to bring to the forefront here, is people like yourself, whether you're in radio, whether you're playing with your cello, you said?
Yes.
Which, by the way, as far as the stringed instruments, that is absolutely one of my favorites. And what really rocks me is the fact that there are bands, there are rock and roll bands that use the cello. One of my favorites, and sadly he's passed away many years ago, Harry Chapin would use the cello in some of the most beautiful places in his music. So I'm very excited about that. How did, and can we use your last name, Pete?
Yeah, well, Mystic Pete is my stage name.
Yes.
I'm Peter Ludwig in normal life. My friends call me Peter.
And you became Mystic Pete. How? I might say it seems pretty obvious because of how that mystical experience happened to get you on radio for the very first time, but I have a feeling it's a little more involved.
When I was a teenager, the doors of perception blasted right open in my life.
Wow.
And I had a series of explosive spiritual awakenings over several years, and things really changed in my life. And I kind of had access to these other dimensions. Healing powers came to me. I could kind of see into the future and past. Sometimes it felt like 1,000 volts of energy was just shooting through my body. And, of course, the way I responded to this was to think, I was going crazy. There's really not much context in this world for people who are having mystical experience.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people end up in insane asylums or yelling at telephone poles or think they're the Messiah and start some kind of a self-serving cult and do a lot of damage in the world. But, there's not some old man who comes to you and says, oh, my child, let me take you to the temple where we will teach you the ways of the wise. No such thing. We're just kind of on our own to work through the school of hard knocks and figure out what all of this wild experience means and give it some context. So I've spent several decades really plumbing the depths of self and spirit to find what this means and have put together a system so I can teach it to others now, because I had to really learn what the basic rules were for mystical reality, because it's really not in the books. It's nothing like what's written out there. So that's where I'm at now with my book, A Teaching System.
Very interesting. And, of course, in my work, professional work as a broadcaster as well as hosting this program, I have been given, did not ask for it, but was given the honorarium, if you will. They refer to me as Dr. D. Now, that has nothing to do with hip-hop or anything. It's just that my last name, which is Dugan, happens to be with a D, and it's very colloquial to just say Dr. D rather than Dr. Dugan, although every once in a while someone will say that. I have no doctorate. I am not a physician, but I'm curious about a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably what helps me. I've been this way. And as a matter of fact, I was reading in a book that my mother kept from my birth that I have now. And she said in there something along the lines of, on my first day of kindergarten, I was seeking attention and would do whatever it took to get it. And now I get to do what I love to do and sort of get that attention. But it's not so much that I'm trying to direct it at myself as much as you and I probably observe the same world. Even though I live up here in Santa Barbara, you live down in Los Angeles, a little more chaotic and hectic down there. But still, we're looking at the same world, and we probably come to the same conclusion. Something's not right here. Something is not working, and it's got to change, and we are the ones that are going to have to change it. And if we don't, then in essence, and I don't know, this sparks another question, our species is doomed. And that question that is raised from that is, well, who said that we were supposed to continue? I mean, who said that this wheel that we're on in this reality is supposed to go on indefinitely? What would happen if, Mystic Pete, what would happen if all of a sudden across the planet everybody said, no, we're not going to have any more kids. We got 7 billion people. How many more do we need? Really? But that by the same token, I guess there is that aspect of species self-preservation. I'm not sure how that all works into the mix, but what is your observation about us as a species on this planet? I mean, is there hope? Should we even have hope? Should we even consider sticking around for another 500 or 1,000 or 10,000 years doing the same thing? I would be so sad if, you know, believing in reincarnation as I do, if I was to come back in 1,000 years and we were still doing the same thing we're doing today.
It's a critical question, and I think it's a question that most people just don't want to think about because of the implications. And I think the truth is there are so many dangers right now facing us. Things could end tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so many viable threats. I'm not just some kind of lunatic. Well, maybe, I don't know. Maybe. No, but you know, I'm not a guy who's yelling the end is near. There's credible information that we're threatened by climate change, global pandemic now is an issue, some virus spreading around the world quickly. Depletion of resources. It looks like the oceans are dying, you know, due to overfishing. All kinds of warfare and rebellion. And because of technology, smaller and smaller groups now have access to more lethal weaponry.
Yeah.
So from so many directions, we're under assault. And this isn't even getting into all the economic perils and the whole internet situation. If the internet crashed tomorrow, you know, it's like the end of civilization because it's so all-controlling on so many systems, from the water pumps to the lights to food. You know, we're back 1,000 years, and nobody knows what to do if the internet crashes because it's all new. Anyway, I don't need to go on and on about this because people read about it in the news every day.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in trouble. But I see this not only as a time of great peril, but a time of great opportunity. And the way it works is this. It's the threats. It's the impending doom that motivates us to dig deep now, to explore uncharted parts of ourselves, and unlock spiritual and mystical powers that will break open this primate cocoon we're all stuck in, and so that we can ascend now and learn to put on angel wings and as a species evolve to the next level of consciousness. So it's the threats. Without the threats, we're just going to keep doing the same things, but people understand they have to change, they have to dig deep, and it's this search that's really going to propel us into a whole new, extraordinarily beautiful age, if we make it through.
Well, that's true. And I mean, even if we don't annihilate ourselves, as you've already stated, there are all kinds of other scenarios that are not even on this planet that could just say, you know what, we don't care. We, boom, hit you with a giant asteroid or meteor and you're done. Those kinds of scenarios. But by the same token, if this planet has been around for as long as people speculate, science speculates, and we haven't been hit by a cataclysmic ultimate destruction piece of matter hurtling through space to this point, I got this feeling that we're sort of in a protective bubble of sorts that is keeping us going for a reason. And I remember talking with someone not too long ago about is this an accident or was this on purpose? You know, and everybody has their own perspectives depending upon their belief systems. But I choose to believe that this was not an accident, because if it was an accident and I chose to believe that, then it wouldn't make any difference if I went out right now and just raped and pillaged and plundered, because this is just an accident. None of this matters. There's no meaning whatsoever. But there's something inside of me that says that I'm here for a reason. My life has meaning. Ergo, I need to be about whatever it is that I feel led to be about, to continue to give it meaning. And I'm sure that you kind of feel the same way, that, you know, this was not an accident.
Well, you seem like just a very spiritual man who you are connected up with a lot of subtle realities and see the bigger arcs of consciousness.
Well, I'm trying, and sometimes the glasses get a little fogged up, but that's the time when I have folks like you on the program to say, hey, can you turn on a windshield wiper or something? I'm having a little trouble seeing in front of my face here because I've gotten caught up, and this happens to a lot of people. I've gotten caught up in what I'll call the delusion. I can't think of the Sanskrit name now, but anyway.
Maya.
The Maya, thank you very much. I've gotten caught up in that. And I'm having trouble pushing that aside and getting back into connection with the one, into connection with the big picture and so forth. I cannot believe that you wouldn't have the same kinds of challenges, especially where you live now. That's got to be that, unless you just go straight from the radio station home into your cave somewhere.
You know, LA. I love what you're saying, and the thing is, LA is a very difficult place to live.
Yeah.
You know, it is the city of illusion. It is Maya here.
Yeah.
And there is a kind of an alienation and loneliness, frankly, in the city that's just unbelievable. And because I'm kind of part of a lot of different circles, the rave scene over here and the entertainment, you know, people know how to dress up and do their hair up in nice clothes and put on a happy face.
Yeah.
But it often masks just deep depression.
The sadness, the loneliness.
Yes.
The separateness that they feel when in the reality. And that's the interesting reality that you and I, we talk about, I'm sure that you do on your program, is that no matter how you feel, you aren't separate.
Yeah.
You're not disconnected. It's only in your mind that you perceive that you're disconnected, but you never have been. You never will be. You will always be connected, but it's only your perception.
And I think as sensitive people, which I'm extraordinarily one of, it's hard being here, and I'm a mystic, and I have access to a lot of this kind of otherworldly stuff, but life on Earth right now is hard, and it's very hard for sensitives and artists and mystics and spiritual people because we're tender, we have open hearts, and there's a lot of cruelty and just isolation, as I said, and how do we deal with that? How do we address that?
Yeah.
We can't just always be in the yoga studio. And, you know, eating and drinking smoothies.
Give me a chai. Well, but when we, I want to take a quick break here, but when we come back, I want to dive into at least the subject matter in regards to your first book, which is Mystic Pete Chronicles, Book One, Sex and Mysticism, because I have experienced some very interesting things over the years, especially when it comes to my own sexuality and growing up in a family of five females and three males. Very interesting dynamic. You have five times the estrogen flowing in the home than you do testosterone. And so I don't know, maybe. And of course, that's obviously what has developed me to the person that I am today, which I'm quite happy with. I have no problem with that. But I want to talk more about your level of where you rank the issue of the subject matter regarding sex and mysticism in regards to our overall life and living. And we're going to do that as we come back. We're going to talk more with Pete Ludwig. He is Mystic Pete, and I'm Richard Dugan, and you are listening to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, and we will be right back.
Tell me your story.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan with Pete Ludwig, Mystic Pete, as he goes by the moniker in Los Angeles radio, as well as the cover of his book, which is the Mystic Pete Chronicles, Book One, Sex and Mysticism. There are those who look, and well, Pete, I mean, you're in a place where I don't want to start quoting numbers or anything, but a whole lot of people right there in L.A. themselves, sex is just, oh, it's just a thing to do. It's not a big deal. But I would like to know, how important is the understanding of one's own sexuality, not just sexuality within a relationship, but one's own sexuality when it comes to our spirituality, which then will tie into mysticism?
All right. By the way, just quick before I get into that, I kind of was knocking L.A. a lot, and deservedly so, but I just wanted to mention also that in Los Angeles and the whole Southern California area, Santa Barbara included, there's a lot of very evolved people. Mm-hmm. I think this is a mecca for the planet of healers and wise people and brilliant, creative people. So, you know, it's a hard place to be, but mm-hmm. it's also the place to be. So, you know, I just wanted to make that clear.
No, and I understand it's, you know, if you look hard enough, and we were in Phoenix for, I was born and raised there, and it became harder and harder to find like-minded people, groups that we could connect with. Wasn't the reason we moved, but nonetheless. And so, yeah, I can relate to that. They're there, but you have to be willing to put the energy out and look for them.
There's no tell me your story in Phoenix, I'll tell you that.
No, there is not.
Yes.
So tell me, where does our own sexuality rate, in your perspective, the importance, the essential aspect of it in terms of our own spiritual life?
I think we're going in the direction where people are becoming more androgynous. People are becoming more both male and female. We're evolving into a place where where everyone is fully empowered with both of those deities, the god and the goddess. Now, it doesn't mean that we're going to be all wandering around in gray robes, sexless eunuchs, mm-hmm. and just bowing and praying all day. That's not how it works out. In fact, we all become much more erotically charged and sexually dynamic because sexuality is at the core of the energy of the universe. It's kundalini. It's life force. It's life force.
Mm-hmm.
It's the thing that 4 billion years ago created cells and little plants to emerge in the evolution. So that's what is driving all of evolution and all of our lives, this powerful, exciting, wild force.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we actualize, the more we become into our fullness, the more sexual we will be. Now, that doesn't mean we're all going to become promiscuous and there's going to be wild orgies around the planet. We're all naked and rolling in olive oil, although that might be great for the Greek and Italian economy. But, sexuality can be exciting and dynamic and responsible, and we can make good choices and have good values and, you know, be dignified, but also let this dynamic force out, this genie out, and all be enjoying a much better sex lives. But that comes when the world kind of matures sexually. We're just kind of in this adolescent phase right now, where on the one hand we obsess over sexuality and pornography, and there's all kinds of horrible sexual crimes and rape, sexual slavery. That's on the one hand. And on the other hand, there's reaction and sexual hatred and intolerance and laws, you know, and killing people for being sexual. So you have these extremes which indicate a very immature state. But at some point, we'll all kind of come into our own, open this up, make good choices, and then we really reach sexual maturity. And when that happens, Earth won't be that bad a place to live. I look forward to that day.
Indeed. And there are also those that I've associated with over the years who would say that your cities and your towns wouldn't even exist if it weren't for sexual energy. That is where, that's where that comes from. So to start to squelch it, to start to push it down, to suppress it, is basically to suppress, I think, kind of what I was talking about earlier in terms of our survival as a species, our even wanting to survive as a species. And that's sort of that's the sort of going backwards, if you will. And so we need that energy, as many traditions and many of the ancient wisdom teachings tell us. That is the energy that creates the outer world that we live in today. So it's very interesting. Now, when you tie that into mysticism, how are you making, I'm just curious as how you're making that connection. I know how you're making it, but I want you to tell our listeners how you're making that connection, because many people don't see, you can't, sex and religion or sex and spirituality, they're separate. They're, you, it's like vinegar and oil.
You, one, will never be able to access the really powerful mystical realm until they are sexually awakened. So much of the spiritual dimensions can only be accessed with this primordial force that a sexual initiation is required. Mm. And again, I'm not talking about having wild sex.
Right.
I'm talking about awakening the sexual forces within yourself. And if you're sexually frustrated, and listen, we're all sexually frustrated, you know? It's like we're in that time of humanity where there's just so much friction going on inside of all of us.
Yeah.
That has to be kind of pulled out and unraveled personally, alone, by yourself. It's a solo journey to begin with. And once you learn how to kind of use these powerful earthly dynamic flows, you can start projecting this erotic force into your life, into your business world. I'm not talking about putting fishnet stockings on and walking on Hollywood Boulevard. I'm talking about somehow projecting your life kundalini erotic force into kind of the business stratas of consciousness. Mm. And what do you know? Money starts to flow easier. It lubricates the money wheel.
Mm-hmm.
So I can give you testimony to that, because I was a broke musician a few years ago, and I started to find these channels into the erotic, the spiritual erotics worlds, and kind of projecting that into money and business world. I know this is very abstract, but I can tell you that very shortly after I had this revelation, a business deal came to me, and I ended up making a whole lot of money in real estate. And now I'm a rather successful real estate investor, musician, radio host. So there's always there's the inner journey. In other words, there's this inner digging out you have to do and resolution. And there's always an outer action that has to be taken. In other words, we're in the physical world. we have to do something physically here to make things happen. But the inner journey facilitates the outer successes.
I've been privileged to be a part of a number of programs, and this is going back 15, 20 years, back in Phoenix, that dealt specifically with our sexual energy and bringing it to the surface, whether you're to the surface, whether you're dealing with the Kundalini energy and so forth, or what other aspects you're dealing with in massage and so forth. And again, we're now talking non-sexual massage, but it was in terms of using Reiki and many other modalities to help to understand who you are as a sexual being. I think that one of the first steps for a lot of folks, Peter, is they don't know, they don't feel comfortable in their own body, male or female. And that can be that they may feel, as a male, I should have been born female, and so they go down that path, and vice versa for the female. They feel they should have been male, so they go down that path. I used to have a problem with that, not in terms of being prejudiced against these people, but trying to understand, you were born into that body, what is your problem? And then I began to understand why people had cosmetic surgery, because it made them feel better. Now, some people get addicted to it, and just like anything else, but it's those people who are not comfortable in their own skin who need to make those modifications. And once they do, boom, they just blossom. They are powerful people. And it doesn't matter what their sex is, male or female, their gender, I guess I should say, as long as they're comfortable. And so it was a few years ago that I looked at that. I'm going, wow, I never thought of it that way. And that's what we're trying to do here is if that's the choice that you need to make, go for it. That's part of what you're talking about, too.
I think finding yourself as a sexual person in the world is of course, a very important part of this. And I've been talking about the solo journey we need to find more on a kind of a Reiki, chi, energetic, mm-hmm. internal and emotional
sure.
level. But also, can we talk now about, like, the, you know, sexuality between people?
Absolutely.
You know, just get into that bit of a juicy topic for a
second. Sure. Absolutely.
PG. So when you're in love, when you're feeling this profound sexual connection with another person, you feel in love with everything. Everything's beautiful. Life is enchanted. You feel like you're one with your partner. Well, you know what? These are the same adjectives that are used to describe spiritual experience. All one, everything's beautiful, love. So what I'm getting at is falling in love, having good sex, are ways to access this transcendental reality. In other words, so sex can be a vehicle for spirituality. And just think about it. Good sex happens when we let down our defenses, when we open up our emotions, and we start to merge with the other person. It's really that emotional merging which provides the sweetness of lovemaking. Most of us have had kind of an emotionless coupling, and it leaves you pretty hollow afterwards. But when there's deep caring, it's just so rich. So merge, again, another very spiritual world, merging with the Godhead. But now we're doing with our lover, and we're doing it through sex. And I'll tell you, I've gotten to a place where I've let myself down so completely, all of my ego and my separate self, into a partner, that I can almost taste what they're tasting with their tongue. I can feel the sensations in their skin, or almost smell what they're smelling. That level of union, it's just an extraordinary experience. And I think anybody can do that with their lover if they take the time and through communication and touching and let it kind of develop. And, you know, suddenly you're in this enchanted place with your lover, and it's extraordinary. Every touch, every sigh is just pregnant with meaning. So, yes, I would say sex is a way to spirituality. And again, we're talking about a very dignified, respectful experience that's completely chosen, and yet it's wild. It takes you out of yourself.
Yeah. I was going to use the word magical, but that would be totally inappropriate for this program. It's mystical. And yes, and I can say that I haven't quite experienced something along those lines, but certainly it reinforces just how connected we are if we would just allow ourselves. And you, in that experience, you allowed yourself to be connected. And yet we are always speaking of how separate we are. You know, it's them versus us. You know, they did it. We didn't do that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I heard an interview some months back. A gentleman was commenting on the state of, and the comment was primarily geared towards the veterans of various conflicts. And what I perceived from his statement was more that he was stating his observations. He wasn't being judgmental or critical, but he was saying that you who are listening, you are just as responsible for the conflicts that are raging out there as we are for participating in the direct activity. Everybody is, he was basically saying, we're all connected. Nobody can abdicate responsibility for anything that's going on around the planet.
Well, have you had other guests on who kind of make the sexual spiritual connection?
Well, I have actually, and we've talked about in years past about tantric sex, which became sort of a craze. But I was on the bandwagon long before it became a craze,
right,
and understood that
not a fad to you.
No, it's not a fad to me. It's a real part of who we are if we choose that particular. If you want to use that name, you can use whatever other name you want other than tantric, spiritual sexuality, et cetera, but it is all just flat out. You can't separate it any more than what we're finding now. This is, to me, what's also fascinating, Peter, is science is beginning to verify the existence and the expression of spirituality, which is like so far from what most people who hate science, who are religious, not necessarily spiritual, but they're more dogmatic and so forth, and they hate science because science cannot prove or disprove the existence of God. And yet, in a manner of speaking, they're saying that, well, everything is energy. And it's the spaces between the particles that are the most important. And I always found that fascinating when I saw a piece on dark matter. They can't find it. They know that it's there, but they can't prove it. And I'm thinking, gee, that sounds an awful lot like God.
Wow. Oh, my God. Of course.
You know? And then another gentleman who is a physicist who was sharing with me about the fifth dimension. He says, I can tell you what the first, second, and third dimensions are, and I can prove to you their existence. Fourth dimension, I can share with you what it is, but I can't prove to you that it exists. However, I can show you its effect on us, the fourth dimension. The fifth dimension, and he started down this long path of conversation as we were walking down the street, and I stopped him and I said, wait a minute. Everything you've just stated, the way you stated it as a physicist, what you're talking about is, and I'll just use the three-letter word, you're talking about God. This is a physicist. And he just looked at me and nodded his head. I said, yes. So it's like as hard as religion and science have been fighting against one another, they're starting to they're starting to come together in that respect. There is no separation. There's only the oneness that is talked about in the ancient wisdom teachings.
Well, do you think things are at a point where there's enough proof or evidence that it almost holds up to, you know, scientific rigor of the connection or the proof of God? Is it at that point yet? Are we still
I think it's at that point. However, I don't think that individuals are at that point. Many individuals, you and I think that we have a glimpse of it, maybe more so than others, only because we've been in this realm, if you will, for decades. I mean, I've been on what I call my search. I'll call it officially, since I was 17, you know, and that was 1977. And I've experienced some rather profound things. My mother asked me once not long ago, have I ever had any supernatural experiences? I said, I wouldn't know, because my observation, as I observe even, for example, the writings that describe the activities of Jesus, that was normal to him. So for me, if it was supernatural, I wouldn't know.
It's all natural to you.
But see, that's what the ancient wisdom teachings tell us. We were created for greater things than what we're doing today. And when I use the term today, I mean in terms of what our species is doing. We were created for greater things. This is not what we were created for. And there's nowhere in any of the writings where I see man was created to be a consumer producer. I don't see that. And I think that we're really starting to hear that. We're starting to understand it better and starting to make the changes in our lives as individuals like you and I, which then changes our families, our acquaintances, our associates, which changes our communities and our towns and our cities and our counties and our states and our countries and eventually the entire planet. What is that phrase? If you want peace, be the peace you want, something along those lines?
And I think you're right. There has been a real deification of the trivial.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't care what Lindsay Lohan was wearing at the Oscars last night. It's irrelevant. Why are you telling me? I don't care. You know? What are we doing as a community? What are we doing as a people to one another? Are we treating each other? I love the golden rule is a wonderful thing. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I don't know who made the twist in it, but I loved the twist. Do unto others as if you were the others. And it's just, to me, it's fascinating. Peter, how long did it... Now, this is book one. How many more of these tomes do you have? Is this going to be sort of the equivalent of the Encyclopedia Britannica?
Well, I have a lot to say, and there's actually 10 of these books. This first one, which, by the way, is a quick, very funny read. It's really a long introduction to mysticism and spiritual principles, and some rather controversial new takes on it.
Mm-hmm.
But then starting in the next book, book two, I begin my teaching work, really teaching people techniques, as I say, so they can acquire mystical power themselves. It's not something you should believe. You shouldn't be following any gurus. Each person now has to learn how to become a mystic and tap into their vast inner resources. And these are techniques which I've developed. They're not, you know, other people have other teachings, and I'm sure there's other great work out there, but I have some very powerful work that is simple, it's easy to practice, and yet leads to some tangible results. And it takes time, but I've explained it in such a way that anybody can understand and practice it in the privacy of their house. And I call them the five powers. So there's five of these areas that I would say every self-respecting mystic should be a master of. And when you've mastered these five powers, you have a lot of force in this world and in the other dimensions.
Yeah. Well, I like, first of all, I like what you have on the back cover of this book, Mystic Pete Chronicles, Book One, Sex and Mysticism. You have a console, which looks similar to one I've operated before. But I like what you have written on the back here in terms of the sex-god connection, stretching time by like taffy, spinning the money wheel, is the world about to end or about to begin, surfing the erato astral realms, but I have to say my favorite is laugh your way to mystical power. And you and I probably are familiar with groups right here in California, there in Los Angeles. I know they're up here in a central, along the Central Coast as well. They do nothing but get together and laugh. Now, I haven't experienced that with these groups yet. I want to. As a matter of fact, I want to have one of their representatives on to talk about this a little bit, because I know from just a physical or biological level, laughter is an unbelievable medicine.
I agree, and I think also laughing means we're having fun, we're being playful, and I think the spiritual realms are playful and filled with laughter. And I think a big problem in the spiritual communities is self-importance and getting too hard and disciplined and mean and ugly. And this is like the opposite of what the spiritual realms are like. Mm. It's, you know, spirits. They even, booze is called spirits. Wild, magical, playful,
yeah.
and laughter, definitely. Fun is a big doorway. Play.
When you began this journey of yours, this spiritual trek, as I did you have any inkling of where you might go? Not specifically in terms of occupation, but in terms of what you were looking for. Because I was told when I was working for the Christian radio station, I was there for 15 years, and I shared with someone that I was on my search. They said, well, once you find Jesus, your search ends. And my thought immediately, didn't verbalize it, of course, was, actually, once I find Jesus, my search is just beginning. Because a lot of the dogma that I kept hearing just didn't make any sense to me. But let me ask you about that. I mean, did you have any idea that you'd be headed in this direction today?
Well, at first, I knew I was a healer. I mean, I had a lot of these things open up, and seeing auras and past lives and all this kind of stuff. And I thought I would be a little bit more of a seminar leader. But I started playing my cello, I would start projecting this kind of healing power through my cello and then through my voice, and I just saw the effect it had on people. Because I was doing, you know, private sessions for people and aura balancing and all that stuff, but I could see now I can take a whole auditorium of people into kind of a altered state just through music, just through projecting this through the music. The music is almost just window dressing, just this, you know, beautiful emotional cello, but it just relaxes people so they can make that journey. And so I find now, I'm 53 and it's a few decades later, that my journey is really spirituality through the arts. And I'm a pop music producer, I'm a video producer, I have a video coming out in a few days, in another music video. I have all these things happening in the arts, and I feel like the arts is a really good place for spiritual people, because we can be a little bit different,
mm-hmm.
and we can stretch the boundaries of consciousness, and it's not only acceptable, but it's desired, because people want to be stretched. They don't want to hear the same song again. What's new? So the arts is a good place for me, and I think a lot of us, as you have found, you know, as a radio host, it's a good refuge. And the only problem is sometimes getting heard.
Yeah,
we get ignored a lot.
Certainly, I've kind of felt that myself from time to time, and wondering what the heck am I really doing here? I mean, I'm not seeing any real significant changes in the world. And I was like, well, what do you expect? You know, you're granted, you are only one voice, but at least you're a voice and you're there. And there are some people that are listening. I mean, I get an occasional email from someone who says, well, I really enjoyed that conversation you had with so-and-so. And it really touched me in a certain way. And I'm most appreciative of that. But I think that you made the comment in when we were talking more about the sexual experience and the connection and putting aside the mind and the ego and so forth. I really think that that's what we have to do. It's like, I don't believe there's ever any wasted time. So when we're doing these interviews, whether they're broadcast live, whether they're archived up on the website, and it doesn't matter what you call them, somebody is going to listen. The right person's going to hear what needs to be heard when it needs to be heard. And so that it, as long as it's being made available, you know, it doesn't matter. It's going to have an impact. We may never see that in our lifetime, but we have to be satisfied with the fact that that doesn't matter, that at least we've said it, we've put it out there, and now it's out there for all the world to see and or hear. And just let it go and just keep moving forward and creating more and creating more. Before we wrap up the program, that's another thing is this time just it creeps up on you and you run out and you wonder if you'll ever finish saying what it is that needs to be said. That's why I love this opportunity that I have every week to do these kinds of programs. But do you find that when you are playing your cello, you're making your music, that something else, that higher part of you just takes over? It's like you're not even consciously aware of what you're doing. You know what you're doing, but I'm saying it just you're in the zone, as they say.
Well, just as you at the beginning of the show said, you kind of get out of the way and let the questions come through you, and I will have to validate you've done a very beautiful job at that. And it's really great talking to you. In the same way, when I'm performing, I do kind of get out of the way, and I would have to say I'm kind of a channel, and I work with other, you know, angelic forces. I actually studied mediumship briefly at the beginning there, but I reject actually transmediumship when people leave their body and another being comes in and takes over. I think this is actually a little dangerous, or at least the information that I've heard, it's just usually kind of kindergarten-y stuff.
Mm.
It's not potent spiritual information. I think the correct position for us to take is we work with the other dimensional deities, but we stay at the helm. We're the captain of the ship, and they talk to us, and then we pass that on, but we just don't turn over the ship to some other deity. And that's definitely what I do, and I get really high when I get high, but
yeah.
It's a physical creation, so I have to manage the space and make sure it's very protected for the people to go on their own journey while transmitting all of my art and energy. Yeah, it takes a while to build this up, and nobody was there to teach me, but it has come through, and it has taught me itself. So, I have a show tonight, and I love doing this. This is, I would say, my deepest work, taking people on that personal journey. But I have a CD. People can find me on my website at mysticbeat.com. Can I just mention my?
Oh, you just take over.
Okay.
No, go right ahead.
My website is mysticpete.com. I'm Mystic Pete on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube. I'm the Mystic Pete, and I have some very entertaining pop videos. And if I may, just as an aside, say that to demystify mysticism. So I'm a pop music producer.
Yeah.
You can breathe spiritual awareness into whatever you're doing, even writing pop songs, or being a real estate agent, or just being a worker in a factory. You can invest your work and livelihood with a lot of presence and awareness, and you don't have to be some monk off in a mountain or some Mystic Pete guy. You know what I'm saying?
Like, true.
It's for anybody.
Well, before we wrap up the program, three final questions.
Yes, sir.
Who is Pete Ludwig?
You got another hour? Well, I've had a very interesting life. I have a couple of grown kids, and I'm hoping to have a national radio show one of these days that focuses on sex and mysticism, looking for more success in the arts and get my words heard. I've been kind of working in the caves and in the desert for a long time, and now it's all just kind of flooding forth.
Though you may have addressed this during the program this last hour, let me ask you straight out, what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I think the world is in a very precarious place, And I think some of us have some of the answers that will help tilt it in our favor, away from annihilation and towards some kind of real dawning of a beautiful new era in consciousness, a new epoch. But we have to dig deep, and I think I do have some of the answers.
And how powerful are we as human beings?
I think because the spiritual realm is permeating the physical, it's right here with everyone. You know, reach out and touch an angel. Whether you're in a prison cell or on a battlefield or on a stage or behind a mic on the radio, you can channel in beauty and compassion and power.
Mystic Pete, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program, and look forward to talking with you and staying in touch with you as we continue talking here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for the for a New World. And if you will thanks again for joining us. It's been fabulous.
Richard Dugan, you are an angel.
Thank you very much. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time. Love Talal.